Welcome to Rock the Midlife Show, a podcast that brings you fun and interesting conversations to inspire, motivate, and encourage women on their journey through midlife. I am Alinka Tercic, your host. I help women at midlife to rediscover themselves and their vision and thrive through the transition into their next stage. Enjoy. Hello, hello. Today, I'm talking with Danielle Batman. She's a parenting coach at Wholeheartedly. Hi, Danielle.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, thanks for being here. And this is such an important topic. We always see like parenting, you know, small kids and young kids and babies. But I see in my community, you know, that parenting and this kind of child parent relationship is as important in, you know, the later stages and later ages of kids. So can you tell us first, what do you do? How do you parent wholeheartedly?
Sure. Well, I come from a classroom setting. So my degree is in teaching. And then I moved into home visiting. And I did that with a nonprofit called Save the Children for several years. And what I realized through that process is what happens at home is what really wires kids and what really matters, because that parent-child relationship is the most powerful tool we have to influence our kids over the long run. And so I really believe parenting is the hardest job in the entire world, not only because of the physical and emotional toll that it takes on us, but also just because of how important and how high stakes and, you know, a lot of pressure it is to parent well and to show up and be the parent that we want to be on our side of the relationship and, you know, just try to do our best every single day, getting up and trying again when we're still human. And it's really hard to stay patient and, you know, to do things that the way that we wished we would. So I'm here to come alongside families that know that they are at their wit's end, or they are, you know, having an empty toolkit of strategies, or they're just not showing up the way that they wish they would, and they want to get on the same page, or they want to just better understand what's going on with their kids and, you know, how to communicate more effectively. And so I have consultations one-on-one with families, and I'm doing that virtually, like we all are interacting these days. Yes. But I just really want to help you gain more tools so that you feel like you are confident and that you kind of know what you're doing, because parenting is just so ambiguous and every kid is different and there's no manual. So I'm here to help.
Oh, I loved your introduction, and you really touched some of the topics that I want to talk about. And one of the things is, you know, like you said, parenting is so hard because there are no manuals. There are so many books around parenting. There are so many books about raising kids. And then, you know, we see others, we compare with others, we put so much pressure on ourselves. And what would you say is the number one thing that parents can do to really, I would say, parent confidently, mm-hmm. and, you know, being really like the parent they want to be without, I would say, even burnout, or, you know, without beating themselves up that they are not doing a great job, because, you know, I believe that every parent is doing an amazing job.
Yes, the struggle is real, right? Yeah, we all can find lots of ways to feel like we're failing or screwing it up. And especially if we compare ourselves to a family next door, or if we read so much conflicting information on the internet these days. It's so helpful that there's so much content, but at the same time, it can definitely make us second guess ourselves much more than if we weren't reading all of that. And so my advice is, you know, number one, to become really attuned into your own gut instinct, because as parents of our kids, we are the experts of them, and we know them better than anyone else ever will, including the experts reading the books. And so when we know our kids really well, and we're very attuned to what's going on with them. And we get really curious as to, you know, why they're getting so upset, or, you know, what's going on at school, or we just really become, you know, the detective and the expert of them, then we're going to know what to do and how to handle things. And we're going to be able to have more empathy for their situation. And we're going to be able to show up more authentically and relate to them at a deeper level. And so that's my number one recommendation. But the second thing to really keep in mind as well is, when we navigate this parent-child relationship, we're coming in with a lot of our own expectations and a lot of expectations of our kids. And we really want to get it right, and we really want them to turn out well. And so we come in with a long agenda of things that we want them to be able to learn and be able to become and be able to be. And we get very worried that, you know, we're not teaching them well enough, or, you know, teaching them the consequences that they need to be able to gain those skills. And out of that really good intention, we become micromanagers, or we become naggers, or we, you know, come down on them really hard because we want to teach them, and that we're missing the overall key piece to that, which is our connection. So if we don't have a really strong connection with our kids in our relationship, then we're not able to influence them in all of the ways that we hope to. And I really liken that to taking it to a work environment. And we've all probably had a really good boss, and we've had a not so good boss. And what are the differences between the experiences that you've had at those positions? Usually with a really good boss, you know that they care about you on a personal level, and that they're invested in you. And not only do they see you as a means to an end and you're there for a paycheck, but they also want to empower you and have you be able to take over more responsibilities as you grow and be able to share your own opinion and have influence over how things are happening. And they take your advice of, you know, what changes to make, and then, you know, go and advocate for you. And it just becomes a much deeper connection. And therefore, if that really good boss asks you to stay late one night or take on an extra project, you're more willing to say yes, because you know that it's not just like a what's in it for me type of situation. Oh, right?
I mean, I love that comparison. I think that everyone can identify that boss or, you know, the good one and the bad one.
Exactly. So we need to focus on bringing in that mentality of functioning as a good boss to our kids. And if there are employees, you know, what types of qualitative aspects of that relationship can we bring in to our home environment and have the same things work? Yeah. So when you think about what really motivates you to work hard for someone else, then usually it's those same types of relationship aspects that are what your kid is looking for and how they want to relate to you on a more, you know, personal empowered level.
Oh, I love that. And I think, you know, having this kind of objective view and also emotional connection to your child, you know, not being just blindly, you know, okay, this is my child, I will stand behind them, whatever they do is amazing, whatever they do, you know, not taking responsibility for something that your kid might be doing wrong, or, you know, so you have to keep that balance, or that, you know, it's a mm-hmm. so thin line between, okay, you know, I have to raise a responsible adult, not, you know, having a spoiled child going into, you know, just aging. So, you know, seeing them as, like you said, as an employees, but also something that you, you know, love more than anything in the world.
Yes. That can be so conflicting and confusing of where those boundary lines lie, because we are so biased with our love for them and us wanting them to do well so much. It does kind of convolute our thinking to not be able to know when, you know, we're walking that line on the right side. And a lot of times we can look at their behavior and then judge that as our report card of how well we're doing. And if they're getting good grades and if they're not, you know, in trouble, then we're doing a good job. And vice versa, if they are, yes, you know, pushing the limits or if they're getting in trouble, then we take that as a sign of we're a bad parent or we're doing something wrong. And really, we need to detach from that report card mentality, because we can do everything that we can and will on our side of the relationship, but ultimately they are still their own person with free will, with their own voice, and they're becoming, you know, their own identity. And we can't control their choices that they make at the end of the day. And if we allow ourselves to detach from that end result and just try to look at the process rather than the product, then we're able to, you know, every day just ask ourselves, okay, am I proud of how I reacted today? Did I try to be the parent that I want to be? Okay, great. Then I'm doing a good job. And, you know, what happens with the end result of that for our kids is something totally separate. And they will either come around or they'll need to learn those lessons, or, you know, they just need the freedom to kind of figure it out. And sometimes they just can't hear stuff from us. And that's really hard, you know, to swallow, because we do want to, you know, set them up for success as much as we possibly can. But knowing that a lot of that journey needs to happen through their own growth and independence as well. But letting them know that we are on their team, we want what's best for them, we are cheering them on, and we're here when they need help, then allows them to feel more empowered and respected and have more dignity to then come crawling back to us when things aren't panning out.
Yeah. I feel that that's the most important lesson, or, you know, trait, or however you call it, that you can give to your child, you know, being always there for them, but also letting them know that, you know, it's their life, it's their, not exactly their choices, you know, they can do whatever they want, but right, they have to, you know, think of the consequences, they have to take responsibility for their actions and whatever comes to it. And sometimes you have to give them some tough love.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they need to be able to kind of fail in their own way, and hopefully in a way where it's still within some sort of a safety net, where it's not, you know, a high stakes, high consequence situation. But if they're able to kind of figure that out before, you know, it becomes like losing their job and becoming a PR nightmare and, you know, all of the horrible things in adulthood that can happen. If we're able to let them fail in, you know, the high school years where they still can kind of pick themselves back up and figure it out, that really does do a lot of good for them, because it helps them see that you trust them enough to, you know, make some of the decisions, and then they kind of rise to that occasion. But it's hard, you know, to know what we're responsible for. And when I work with my clients, I help them kind of define what is your role as a parent. And it seems, you know, pretty easy, but when you look at, okay, what verbs am I really, you know, responsible for, to do for my child? And usually it's the ones of, I am responsible to love them, I'm responsible to protect them, I'm responsible to provide for them. You know, a lot of those core things of that relationship that we signed up for. But then what are we not responsible for? That's the hard part. And, you know, we want to sign ourselves up for everything, but we are really responsible to our kids to provide those things, but we're not responsible for them at the end of the day for the results of, you know, their behavior, for how their life pans out. And so we are not, you know, responsible for their behavior or for their decisions or for their emotions and for their feelings about things. And that's hard, but we can still empathize with that. And we can say, I understand you really wanted to go to that party. It probably feels like everyone's at that party, and that really sucks. Like, we can still empathize and relate to that and share, like, what that looked like for us when we were in high school, and, you know, and the reasons behind why we're not letting them go. But at the same time, we are not responsible to keep them happy 100% of the time. you know, or base our decisions off of whether or not it's going to upset them, because that's not what's actually doing what's best for them.
Yeah, I love, I mean, I really want to emphasize what you just said, that we are responsible to love them, to care for them, but we are not responsible for them. And it kind of summarizes, you know, our role. But like you said, it's hard to see where, you know, in each situation, are you doing your best? Are you just facilitating their problems? You know, are you contributing to the problem?
Yeah, there's a lot of enabling that could
possibly happen. Yes.
Out of good intentions of, you know, not wanting them to, you know, fail that class, or not wanting them to drop out of, you know, that team, or whatever it was that is going to end up being the consequence of their action. We hate to see our kids in pain. We hate to see them suffer unnecessarily. That's so hard. It breaks our hearts, for sure. But we have to keep that end goal in mind of what is this all for? And at the end of the day, we want them to be a responsible, functioning, you know, kind human that can hold a job and, you know, contribute to society, of course. And the only way that we can kind of get them across that end goal line is to help them understand that their actions have consequences, and that, you know, they are ultimately the only one that can make the right decision for their life. And that's just hard to keep letting them go and, you know, kind of flounder in that. But usually, if we show that we are there and we're doing it for their good, and we are, you know, not adding unnecessary pressure, but instead just allowing them to kind of feel like we're cheering them on, even when we're letting go, you know, they will figure it out. And we just have to have a lot of hope in that and believe that all the hard work we put in the early years is going to pay off.
Yeah, we can only hope.
Crossing our fingers.
Yeah, but you said it's so hard to let go. And I have in my community women who are experiencing emptiness, you know, kids leaving for a college, kids bearing it out. And they just, a lot of them can't cope. There are some, you know, they're very excited. Oh, I have my life back, you know. Mm-hmm. Way more time. I can do things that I've never done before. But there are so many who are suffering, who are so kind of attached or identified with that kid. That, yes, you know, they have such a hard time letting go and letting them live their own life. So what would you say to those?
That is so difficult, because when we have so much influence and control and just quality time with someone, you know, saying goodbye is hard in any way. And there's, you know, stages of grief that you have to work through that period. And that does look different for everyone. And so not to discount that, but to, you know, work through that and understand how big of a deal that is for you, and seeking help, you know, talking to people about it, journaling about it, you know, going to therapy if you need to just feel like you're kind of reconciling those feelings. But do that own work, you know, yourself, and don't expect your child to take on any weight of responsibility for that, because, you know, they are off on their own and they are figuring out the world and they are having all sorts of challenges of their own identity crises and, you know, trying to figure out who they are and how they fit into the world. And that is really hard in and of itself. And that's a completely different journey than the one that you're on now as an empty nester. And so, you know, letting your kids feel that freedom of like, I'm here if you need me. But I do have my own identity and my own life and my own, you know, pursuits and passions that I'm going to get back to. And, you know, I'm excited for both of us on this journey, and we will keep, you know, touching in and checking in and, you know, have some sort of a system for that, a structure that helps you both get on the same page for that expectation of, you know, yeah, let's chat every Sunday night, or, you know, let's do, you know, like a virtual family dinner, or, you know, something that helps you both understand how you can keep connected without, you know, continuing to disappoint the other. I know that can be hard to navigate. I remember, you know, when I was there as a college student and I felt like my mom was calling constantly and I just, you know, couldn't shake her off my back. And that did, you know, cause a lot of strife in our relationship for a while because I didn't understand where she was coming from with that. I didn't understand, you know, the loss that she was experiencing. And I couldn't relate to that and empathize with that. But, you know, other women that are experiencing that same thing can. And so reach out to that community and plug in and, you know, get the help you need there.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, as we take care of our kids and we grow with them, you know, it's not just another state. You have to kind of develop a new way of the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel like the kids will always be there for you, but just in a different way. You will always love them, no matter if they are 1 year old, 5 years old, or 35.
Yes.
And the kids will love you back always, but it's just a different, you know, you're in different phases of your life that you have to both adapt to a new way, more of the communication than the real relationship.
Yes. Yeah. And if you can, you know, be really upfront with where you're at and your needs and, you know, that your fears and being able to communicate those to say, well, you know, when you don't respond to my phone call 20 times in a row, that makes me feel like you are dead in a ditch. So I tend to freak out, you know, like explaining your side of that and why it feels like such a big deal to, you know, a child that may just be like, you're crazy. you know, it's good to be really aware of where you're at and where you're coming from and be able to communicate that and then be able to ask for what you need to say, like, you know, for your first week in school, I'm just going to have a really hard time. So is it okay if, you know, we check in every day? And then, you know, once we're good with that, we'll stretch it out a little bit. But it's okay to, you know, ask for that if you need it. But then also, you know, acknowledge what your kids are going through and ask them lots of questions and get curious and just be a listening ear for what they're going through if they're ready to talk about it. And if they're not, they may need some space, you know, for a while, but then if they know that you're a safe place to come back to and that, you know, if they are safe to share something that's hard or, you know, that they got in trouble, if they're, you know, in a bad relationship, you ultimately want them to know that they're safe to come back to you, even if you haven't talked for a while. And so the most important thing to remember is our relationship is still the key to having that influence over them and wanting them to do well for you. And the way that you nurture that is to, you know, meet them where they're at and meet their needs of letting them be them their full selves, you know, helping them to really feel like they still belong in your family and that they have an important voice and opinions to share. And if you're focused on meeting those needs, then of course they will continue to, you know, want to come home for Christmas and do all the things with you.
Right. So do you think that we can kind of prepare for that before it happens? I mean, is this connected to how you parent before they leave? You know, so giving them maybe a little bit more space before, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Years before, or, you know, having maybe a different conversations or, you know, putting more responsibility on them instead of, you know, taking care of everything, overseeing everything and just being their yes. manager.
For sure. And there, I learned that there's three stages of parenting and kind of how our roles function with our kids. And the first stage is teacher. And that is really from like 1 to 7 or 8. And we are essentially teaching them everything they need to know about how to survive in the world. And, you know, that's simple things like how to hold a fork and how to, you know, go potty on the toilet to, you know, this is how you get someone's attention and this is how you act when you're mad. It's all teaching because they don't have those skills and, you know, we're helping them kind of understand how the world works and their brain is downloading software, you know, to really program everything about who they are and create all those templates. But then we move into like a counselor phase from like 8 to 12. And in that stage, you're teaching still, but you're explaining more of the why, and you're having a lot more conversations about, you know, answering their questions and, you know, more of the facts of life and, you know, talking about deeper, harder topics, and because they are, you know, ready for it. And, you know, prior to that stage, lecturing and things kind of goes over their head because it's, they just want the world to be much more black and white and consistent. But then, you know, once they are 8, 9, 10, they understand that things are a lot more, you know, complicated and there's a lot more gray in the world. And so they're really curious to have those conversations. And you can explain more of the reason of this is why we respect authority. And this is why, you know, we have to, you know, be safe in these situations. But then once they get to be 13, 14, you know, and up through high school, we function more like a coach. And when we're their coach, we are relying on the lessons that we taught before and the things that we'd already counseled them through. And then really we're kind of letting them do the thing. And we're there as their coach to be a mentor and to keep checking in and to touch base and give lots of reminders. But for the most part, through that stage, we want them to feel like they have a lot of control over what their life looks like, in ways that are very, you know, responsible and still safe within boundaries. But that's the phase where we can start to let go and we can start to give more responsibility to them and have them take over certain aspects of their life, you know, very like a slow ball of momentum. But that also allows us to kind of see that they can do it. And when we know that they've taken over their laundry and they've done it for, you know, their whole years of high school, then we don't have that fear of, oh no, when they go to, you know, college, they won't be able to do this. I haven't taught them this yet, or they, you know, may not be able to do this on their own. And we can have a lot more trust in them just because we have the track record. They have done this, you know, a bunch. And so the more that they can take over and start to, you know, cook and clean and understand how a checkbook works and, you know, just change oil and change a tire and do all of those things, and we can coach them through that in that stage, then that allows that, you know, separation transition to have for us to have a lot more peace of mind with it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And I think that we are just looking for that peace of mind, you know, because all of the sudden you don't know where your child is, what they are doing, you know.
Yeah,
are
scary.
Are they eating? Are they sleeping? Are they, you know, like, it's a different environment. It's out of your sight. So, and I think that at the end of the day, we just need to feel that, you know, we've done a good job and
yes,
they can handle the world.
Yes. Yeah. And there is no guarantees, you know, there's no formula that if we just follow A plus B equals C, then our kids are going to be perfect and have, you know, no bad things happen to them in life. There just isn't that guarantee. And that's the other heart-wrenching part of parenting is, you know, being able to just let them go into the world, not knowing what that's going to look like for them. And that is a really, really scary thing because we care so much. Yeah. But there, like, it's better to accept and be aware of that loss of control and, you know, understand what we do have control over, and working really well to focus our attention on those things, which is the way that we communicate and the way that we stay calm and the way that we, you know, infuse and lead by example, as opposed to trying to clamp down on these things that we only have the illusion of being able to control, but really we don't. And then that can tend to really spoil, you know, some of the things that we're working so hard to put into place in the first place for our relationship with our kids. And they can feel that and they, you know, will want to rebel from that. And so the more that we can reconcile that loss of control on our side of it and cope with that in healthy ways, the better.
Exactly. So Daniela, can you tell me where people can connect to you, how they can find you? You also have your own podcast.
Yes, absolutely. I just got mine off the ground. It's called Failing Motherhood. And I just really have a heart to talk about how hard it is and be able to share real life examples of what that looks like for, you know, moms that are struggling with anxiety or depression or, you know, just feeling like a failure because their kids are really picky eater. At Failing Motherhood, we talk about those hard things, but then we also share ways that we've grown and, you know, advice and hope that we can share with other moms that hopefully help them feel not so alone. And so you can find me there. And then my website is parentingwholeheartedly.com, where you can book sessions with me one-on-one to talk through problem solving, whatever unique struggle your family is going through right now. And I can help you find strategies and solutions that work individually for you. But then you can also find me on Facebook and Instagram and all the good places.
Like we all are everywhere. Awesome. Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure. And I think that you gave us a really, you know, good thoughts to think about and to view our role as a parent in a, you know, like more, you say, controlled way of doing our job, not just loving our kids to death.
Yes. Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks for joining us on Rock the Midlife Show. If you find value, you can visit our website, rockthemidlife.com. where you can listen to previous episodes and subscribe on iTunes, Google Podcasts, and other platforms so you never miss an episode. I would very much appreciate a rating on iTunes or if you simply tell a friend about it. You might also want to check out our Facebook community, The Midlife Sorority. I hope we meet again next week for our new episode. Bye!